This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Hey there, everybody. Happy Monday to you. It is Jacob Albrock and Brandon Zinner in for Tommy this morning. Max Power producing. We are glad to be with you to get a week started because it's been a very busy weekend and we have a lot to say about it. So we're happy to be here with you on KFH 97.5 FM on 12 News Plus, Facebook, YouTube, X. You can get in touch with us lots of different ways. You can call us at 869-1240. You can leave us messages on our video streams. Those are easy to do if you're watching us on Facebook, YouTube, or X. Or if you're listening to us on the Odyssey app, you can hit that little microphone and you can leave us a voice message. All kinds of different ways to get in touch with us. It's the draft in the books. We've got the Royals back in action. Wichita State adds a new player. There's the NBA playoffs that Brandon's far more locked into at this point than I am, but we can get into any of that if we need to. Brandon, how are you this morning?
Yeah, the Minnesota Timberwolves yesterday had the Lakers so rattled that the Lakers did not even make a substitution in the second half. The Wolves up 3-1. Yeah, I am locked into the NBA playoffs. An awesome NFL draft to follow as well. It was it's a slow time for the sports calendar, but it sure did not feel like it over the weekend.
Yeah, not this week isn't, because the draft sort of consumes us a little bit, and it did. And there were a lot of juicy things that we'll get into. You had the Chiefs getting through the rest of their draft. We talked to you Friday. Josh Simmons, I want to get Brandon's take on the Simmons pick, and then we'll look at the rest of their draft, some of the other teams there. And of course, the Shedeur Sanders story. It blows my mind. I think he's got a chance to be a pretty good quarterback in the league. To fall that far is pretty interesting. Didn't expect it. I don't think a lot of people did. Maybe outside of the NFL, inside it, it became pretty clear. I think all the things, but we'll get into all of these things. The Royals are sort of back, right? Like, we wondered if it was just as simple as the schedule could cure what ails them. Well, it sure seems like the schedule is curing what ails them after just a brutal stretch of games to start the year. As far as who they're playing, the Royals have now finished a homestand and they won all of them but one game, and they're right back in the mix here, just a game under 500. And feeling pretty good about them, too. So we'll get into all of this today. Brennan, the draft, how much do you lock into the later rounds of the draft? Are you just kind of, it's on, just kind of keep an eye on? I know you were working, so you got to pay probably a bit more attention than most because we have to try to follow all the local storylines. Tons of KU and K-State players go. We had a kid from campus get drafted. How is the end of the draft for you?
No, I'm kind of a draft sicko, not in the fact that where I'm grinding these guys' film all off season and then reading every single profile, but I do listen to a lot of draft podcasts just because it's fascinating to me how, like, especially the mock draft cycle. You can have five different mock drafts and they'll have someone different going into every single pick. So I like diving into all these players. For example, Breshard Smith, the Chiefs running back that they get in the seventh round out of SMU. I'd been pounding the table for him for quite a while. I really liked what he was able to do. It seemed like he was going to be there in the later stages, and I just think that that's going to be a really good fit. I think he's going to have a chance to really push for a lot of snaps this season. I love locking into all seven rounds. Because, you just never know who's going to make an impact, especially even in UDFAs. We see it all the time. Brett Veach, almost as good as anybody. There's people taking on day three and after that are going to make impacts on this Chiefs roster.
Yeah, you and I cut our teeth with Division II schools. UDFA is just sort of the wheelhouse for programs with really good players who maybe don't have the hype. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm kind of more into the strategy of it a little bit. I like trying to get inside the draft room. Like, what are we thinking here? I can't take it down the list. And I was actually, it's funny. Breshard Smith is a guy I like a lot too. But then we look at it for the Chiefs, for example, and then it's Jalen Royals out of Utah State. I don't know much about Jalen Royals out of Utah State. Where did they take him? How much did they emphasize the position? That kind of thing is where I get a little into it when you get further down the board. And it's even moved up for me. But we'll get into the Chiefs in the next segment. At a bird's eye, though, I thought their strategy in this draft was solid. I thought it was really solid.
For the most part.
I thought they did a nice job of sort of combining both of the things that we talked about they need to do, and they moved around to get it done. They had a lot of picks. So that it's interesting because you'll probably have a little more to say about the specific players. But for me, it's just like, what did they do and what were they trying to accomplish? And then you need to look around the rest of the league. There were probably a lot of teams that got a little better. You know, I wonder if any teams that was really close to the Chiefs, you know, of course, they lose the Super Bowl to the Eagles. But when we talk about the Ravens or the Bills, did they do anything to close the gap? Oh, you can make a case for the Ravens that they potentially got a whole lot better on defense. Right. So we'll look at all of that throughout the day today. It is a great day. And then a real quick bird's eye on the Royals. It's exactly what we kind of had to see early in a season. You want to talk about a week for as a Royals fan? You get the three game sweep of Colorado, the 2 out of 3 against Houston. You pitched well, you hit well in several of those games, about half of them, and you get Cags in a move to the Alpha. It's a good week to be a Royals fan last week.
Oh, of course. Yeah, it's funny. I was on Sports Sunday on 12 News with TJ last night, and he's sitting here talking about how not enough people are talking about the brutal stretch that the Royals had. I said, no, TJ, we talked about it every single day. You were just enjoying a honeymoon in Hawaii, as you right. should have been. I say that obviously tongue-in-cheek, but the Chiefs, or the Royals had the toughest 10-game stretch that they will have all season. Go look at the entire schedule. Nothing's going to stack up to that. But then to return home, you get a sweep, you win a series. You don't need to sweep series at home. You just need to win as many as you can, and to do it in the fashion that they did. The starting pitching continues to rock. They still need some bats to come around, and we'll get into that throughout the day. But good to see Salvi start to turn it around as well. Bobby continues to play well. Drew Waters had an excellent week. He's been a nice call-up. So, yeah, things trending in the positive direction for the boys in blue.
Yeah, and look, if they only beat the teams they're supposed to beat this year, they're going to be in the mix for a playoff spot. I think the chances are still very good to do more than just beat the teams they're supposed to. It gives them a little runway, though, and some time to maneuver. So it's been a big week for them. We have a lot to get to today, and we'll get it all in. The Shockers added player. We'll discuss that as well. We've got an interview coming up at the top of the next hour, a cool charity event coming to town. So we have that for you today as well. I want to say thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH. We enjoy those all across the Odyssey studios. Again, Max Power has your KFH hotline. It's 869-1240. You can give us your draft grades. You can do that on our video streams, Facebook, YouTube, X. It's all available for you. When we come back, we'll tell you what we thought of the draft. We'll start with the Chiefs. That's next on Sports Daily. It's Jacob Albrock. It's Brandon Zinner. Don't go away.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily, and we are glad to be with you here this morning. It's Monday morning. Jacob Albrock, Brandon Zinner with you. And we got some draft to talk about here, Brandon. Let's start with the Chiefs. We've got a lot to get into. The Shedeur Sanders story is fascinating. It is not the quarterback sexy draft of a year ago, but Sanders provided a lot of drama. I think ultimately he ended up in a really, really good spot. But we'll get into all of that. The prank call. What a weird weekend. But let's start with the Chiefs, Brandon. You and me and Tommy and TJ were sort of discussing the Chiefs on a thread as round one came down the line. And I felt like the draft was falling for Simmons to be the guy. I thought going into the draft, I thought this was a good year for Kansas City to move up. And for me, it was specifically just be done with this left tackle situation for years. You move up, you take one of the top guys, you can bring them along slowly this year. And when I say slowly, I mean, they don't have to be ready for game one because of some of the other, moves they've made in the offseason. And Juwan Taylor's going to create a need there next year anyway. And they didn't move up. And then so we start watching, and it's like, okay, they're not going to move up. What are they going to do here? They could move up for edge. Some of those guys were kind of going, and man, Simmons just kept sliding right down the board. I know there's an injury risk, and I know he wasn't your favorite pick. I love that pick because I think if he is the most talented tackle in the draft, and by a lot of accounts he is, and I know there's the injury concern, they finally put themselves in a position with a player at that position for the first time since Eric Fisher that they can be done trying to patchwork a left tackle together. You got to be healthy here. But if that's the only concern, I think absolutely it's an appropriate risk for the Chiefs. I love that pick.
Yeah, I have come around to it a little bit. There's multiple ways to look at it. The whole throwing a bunch of resources at it and taking away resources from other parts of the team, it is valid. They paid Jalen Moore this offseason. They didn't have to give him a ton of money. They still are paying Juwan Taylor. The Josh Simmons injury, it's a real thing. The patellar tendon, he's a bigger dude. There is risk there. But in the long term, this has potential to be an absolute steal. By all accounts, he probably would have been a top 10 pick without the injury. He was playing like the best left tackle in college football, but the injury was there. In the end of the day, the Chiefs are able to trade back one spot, get an extra pick that helps them later in the draft as well. They move around, are able to do some things. I've come around to I'm accepting of the pick. There's things that I would have liked to do otherwise, I think, addressing the defensive line more in that first round, but if in the long term, if this guy's helping keep Patrick Mahomes upright and he's as good as he was with his college tape, because his college tape is it's filthy. It's absolutely ridiculous. If he can do that in a Chiefs uniform next year, it's not this year. I'll say it's a win for the Chiefs.
Yeah. And look, I think the other part of it is like if you've never done this, do it. Go look at like all the top end tackles in this league, whether they're all pros, whether they're graded, and just go look at where they were drafted. It's one of the positions where not a lot, like you all, it's one of the positions where high end draft capital is needed more than other positions. It's one of the most top heavy that way. There's quarterback, of course, man, tackle is one of those spots.
It might be the most
better. Yeah, you better take them early because the chances they pan out late are far less than some other positions. The Chiefs have done great of getting interior linemen late in drafts, but not tackles, and most teams don't. So you've got to, like, at some point you have to come to terms with that, the Chiefs. Now, the challenge has been, of course, that they never pick high enough in a draft to address it that way, at least in this era. So even if you go back further past Mahomes, right, since Eric Fisher, the Chiefs have been relevant for a decade and a half here almost. Like, they haven't had a lot of bad seasons outside of that one. It's made it really hard, and they've tried a number of ways to do it. They've traded a ton of draft capital. They've spent a ton of money. and it's never been the long-term solution. So you hope that this does that. And you mentioned the edge rusher, and I do think going into next season, because if it were me, I would take McDuffie. I don't think they can afford to franchise tag Karlaftis, because I don't think his production would match giving a top five defensive end contract at that point. But maybe you can get a long-term deal. I think that's going to be a challenge. Felix Anudike-Uzomah isn't what they hoped he would be yet. And how many times can they keep bringing back Charles Omenihu? So they're going to have a need at edge rusher. So after Simmons, what do? They go spend high draft capital, Brandon, pick 63 and pick 66, and they get two of them. One of them, I believe, in Norman Locke can play defensive tackle. So, you know, there's a Chris Jones help answer. Like, the strategy of this draft started to make a ton of sense. And then with all the acquired capital, what do? Because they had to trade up to get to 85. Is that right? They had to trade up for that other third round pick. Then they go, and just in case with corner, the other position of need that we all sort of thought, because we don't know, you know, if they'll get a long-term deal done with McDuffie, they go and get a corner. So strategically, and I don't know a lot about either any of those three players they took there, Norman Lott, Jalat, or Williams. But I do know all three of them strategically next year when they have a ton of holes, because they ran it back this year, but they're not going to be able to do that again. That should help Spags and that defense continue to get better if they can't re-sign some of these guys next year.
Yeah, so just recapping, Norman Lott, it's that out of any pick, I think that's the most questionable one that the Chiefs made. If you go look, this is a guy that played sparingly in 5 years. He averaged 14 snaps for Tennessee this last year, which is like, this guy is going in the second round. So that is a very, very questionable one. He doesn't have a lot of production, but I think, yeah, again, they like to go with, we have these measurements, we want to this sort of athletic profile, and I think that they do see that with Omar Norman Lott, the defensive tackle out of Tennessee. They definitely see that with their other day two picks, and Ashton Gillette and Noel Williams. Ashton Gillette did produce at Louisville. Very good edge rusher. He has the measurables that Steve Spagnuolo was, and then Noel Williams, I mean, just the production jumps off the table. 14 career interceptions, 7 just this past year. Really good rangy cornerback, a lot of speed, long. I mean, I think he has a chance to come in, and he's going to be competing to be that number two. It's a bad day to be Josh Williams, because I think that this guy is going to be the long-term answer opposite of Trent McDuffie. But I am satisfied with what they did on day two.
Yeah, I thought, again, like, we're going to see about these players. That's when you're talking about the Chiefs having success, this is usually where they find it, right? Rounds, I don't know, 3 through 5, we'll call it. And they took a bunch of players there, and they had draft capital. And that's the thing, too. Like, they could have sat around and just picked a bunch of players at their spots, which would have been fine, by the way. But they clearly attacked guys that they liked, because they shrunk down the amount of picks and they used some of the capital to move around in the draft to do it. That always, to me, when I'm watching the draft, and this is just me, like, when I see teams move up like that, it tells me they really liked a player and they wanted to make sure they got a specific player. So every time you see a team move up, it's like, okay, well, they're about to take somebody they really like. And they did that several times. So that, you know, that makes you feel good. Jalen Royals, a receiver out of Utah State. I don't think the Chiefs had to have a receiver. I was never in that camp. I know a lot of people wanted the Chiefs to go receiver. I think they'll be fine at that position. This guy, in a best case scenario, will start the year as the number 4 receiver. And probably the number 5 receiver.
Well, with the Rashee Rice pending suspension, he might be number 3.
Right, but if that court case isn't still, and I don't know what the latest is, but if it's still not even due in court until December, like, to start the year, he's probably, and that's fine. Like, that's okay.
And he's coming off the injury as well, so it's, yeah, so it's a luxury pick.
Either way, they still brought back Hollywood. Worthy has developed. Kelsey came back this year, and they brought back Juju. Like, they... I never, and I'm good. I like taking a receiver late in the draft. I don't care about that, a round 4 receiver, but the round 1 receiver thing. And I'm just like, guys, like, I don't know. Like, at some point, that's not the reason the Chiefs haven't been able to push the ball down the field. It's not because they don't have enough receive. Like, it's because they can't block it up. And now you hope they'll be able to block it up better and they can get some deep routes. And maybe this guy helps them or anybody helps them next year. But that was, to me, that was never going to be a this year proposition at wide receiver. They have enough there for now. Injuries are hard to predict. If they fall into that situation like they did a year ago, obviously they could use a receiver. So taking one in round four, I'm fine with. I don't know anything about the player. I've never seen him play football. Not one time, not one snap. Never watched Utah State last year. I won't lie to you.
You want me to break him down for you?
Yes.
Okay. So how does 10 catches of 50-plus yards in the last 2 years sound to you? Because that's the most in college football. How does 8 yards after contact for his career or after catch sound for you? So that says he's catching the ball for three yards past the line of scrimmage. He's taking it for 11 every single time. I mean, this guy... there was a lot of people who thought, including me, looking at a lot of mock drafts, that we say it for a lot of players. Oh, how did they not go in round two? Everyone always falls. No one rises, it seems, in the NFL draft. But this guy could have very well been gone very early on day two. A guy that a lot of people just projected to the Chiefs. And I think this was the Chiefs guy. If they were going receiver in day two and they get him early in day three, I love that pick. Maybe my favorite pick.
Just described Rashee Rice and Xavier.
That's his NFL comp, I think, Rashee Rice.
So, and that's good. That makes sense, right, for a Rashee Rice situation. I think, you know, after this season, you have three of those guys in the offense. It makes sense. I still think at some point Worthy will be a stretch the field guy. It didn't work last year.
We saw it in Super Bowl.
They've got to block that up better. No, I mean Worthy as a deep threat.
Yeah,
Worthy
we saw that in the Super Bowl. It was a great deep threat. And Mahomes has acknowledged that.
He's a great player. And he'll figure that out. I think that connection will happen. It's just, to me, it's more about can they give Mahomes and the receivers time to run deep routes. Like, we don't know if Rice or Worthy are good at that because they haven't had a chance to do it. The line has been pretty bad for a while. And so that's where I go back to Simmons. Like, to me, that opens up the offense. If they solve left tackle, whether it's Simmons or anybody this year, if they can solve the pass blocking, that's what the offense needs. So I love that. And I like a guy that fits stylistically. And it sounds like he's a good backup plan if and when Rice ultimately gets suspended and they finish it out with another linebacker. Fine. And then Breshard Smith, I agree with you. I think he stylistically fits in. I think it tells us, because there was this question, you know, there was a report, I think ESPN had the report that they were seriously considering running back and kind of moving up and doing all these things. I don't know that anybody watches the Chiefs and thinks they need like to change away from Isaiah Pacheco. I think that the world has caught up to what I've thought for years now, which is he's not going to hold up over a course of a season. He runs too violently, and he's not big enough to run that way 20 times a game. So I think this just puts another, bullet in the chamber for Andy Reid and the offense to be able to do that. I am not a believer in the health of Elijah Mitchell. I don't know how much he'll contribute because he's never been healthy. And I think Kareem Hunt is, running on fumes at this point. Great story last year. He helped the team a lot, but man, he adds zero juice to the run game. He's a great pass blocker, and he can fall forward, basically. And that's fine. That's okay. He knows what he's doing in the red zone. Like, he adds some stuff to the team, but I'd much rather see Pacheco with, 10, 12 carries, another guy with 8 carries, and Hunt with his role very clearly defined. So I think that's where you get some help here. And I think he and Pacheco can sort of be backup plans to each other. But yeah, again, it's a guy that fell that a lot of people were really high on. I've been hearing about Breshard Smith forever. When I saw him in the seventh, I was like, where did he come to? How did he get down to the seventh? Like, I thought everybody was high on him.
Yeah, Breshard Smith, he's also, so he was a wide receiver for a long time and then recently made the switch over to running back. So, and if you go watch his tape, I mean, he's going to be a guy where the Chiefs can line him up in the backfield, move him out wide, and then you're just going to get matchup problems, and that's going to be very beneficial, I think, for the Chiefs' offense. And then Jeff Bassa, the linebacker you talked about, he's going to be a really good run option right next to Nick Bolton. They should pair very well, and then Leo Chanel as well, Drew Tranquil as well. That linebacker group, I think, all of a sudden just got a lot deeper because I think he's going to be able to contribute on day one. But yeah, I mean, go back to the Royals pick. Just we don't know in the end if after the season, Rashee Rice, the whole contract situation is going to come up. Is Brett Veach going to pull the trigger on paying that guy off of right now? We're looking at just a season and a half of production. Now we've got the injury, the off the field stuff. So I think it's always about just keep replenishing that room. Because in the end, you're looking behind the Rashee and Xavier Worthy. We don't know about Hollywood Brown. Juju, okay, he is what he is. Sky Moore is probably not going to be on this roster. Maybe I'd imagine. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't make it to training camp, honestly. Travis Kelce, who knows? We like Noah Gray. Jared Wiley drafted last year at tight end. The injury issues, they didn't get to see him as a rookie. But so, yeah, just keep replenishing those pass-catching options for Patrick Mahomes. But, yeah, overall, I'm happy with what Brett Veach was able to do over the last 3 days.
All right, we got just a few minutes here. We'll get into the Shedeur Sanders thing in the next segment. Real quick, what was your favorite pick of the draft?
Are we talking about the Chiefs or are we talking about...
No, just of anybody. We're going to give a favorite pick and a favorite like overall draft for a team. I'll go first on pick. I'll give you a second to think about it. And it's just because I love the player so much.
We might have the same one.
McMillan for the Panthers. I think he's going to make a huge impact there. I really, really like that player. And I think getting him there to help Bryce Young and, you know, they need some help at that position anyway. I think that's just a massive get for them. And he went right where he was supposed to go. It wasn't like he fell into their lap or anything. I just really like that player, and I do think that's a good fit. That's my favorite pick.
Mm-hmm. I have a couple honorable mentions. Mac Olden to Green Bay, first wide receiver. They've taken the first round since 2002. That's a really cool story. Omarion Hampton, I think, is sneaky for the Chargers. I mean, he's going to come in and going to be their day one running back.
Such a good
but
fit.
But my favorite one, it's so exciting, Emeka Abuka to Tampa Bay. You're talking about he's going to get to play right behind Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and with what the Bucs love to do with that offense. Emeka Abuka is so good. Oh, that is going to be amazing watching him with – I mean, that offense is legit.
Couple of team for me. Chiefs, quite frankly, I loved the way the Chiefs got. I think getting Simmons late, the Chiefs are definitely in the conversation for me. I thought the Cowboys did a really good job. I know people didn't like taking a guard that early, but they got to replace Zach Martin. But getting Ezeraku in the second round and then Revelle in the third, come on now. Like, I thought they did a really good job. Look, I'm going to give the Jaguars, and I don't normally like moving up
for Travis
in a draft and giving up what they did, but they got two players. They got two players at two very clear needs. So I'll give the Jaguars a tip of the cap, and I'll give a tip of cap to the team they traded with, only because I feel like the Browns got a potential NFL starter in the fifth round. It doesn't matter what else happens in their draft. If Shedeur Sanders is a starter and a competent one, you got him in the fifth round, the rest of their draft's going to look great. Nobody will care. We kind of began to dig into some of our favorite things. Brandon gave you a draft he didn't like with the Falcons. The Falcons in the news here because one of their coach's kids prank called Shedeur Sanders, which is... I mean, I get it. Young people make bad decisions. It sucks in the moment. Like, if that would have happened, I think, Brandon, in, like, the first round and then Shedeur slid a little bit further into the first round, I don't think it would feel so sinister. It just, when you know that how far that went and how that went, that's what makes it, you're just like, yeah, that sucks. Like, that sucks. Like, because I love comedy. I love a good joke. Like, I don't want to sit here and get so mad about it. But if it would have been in a different circumstance and he wasn't like falling to the fifth round, I think but man, that's a tough one. And at some point that kid's just going to call Shedeur and be like, my bad, dude, that was not cool.
Yeah. I think the kid put out a statement yesterday. So the Falcons, I believe him and Shedeur did connect and Shedeur, accepted his apology, but yeah, if it would have happened, it's the fact that it was on camera and, I mean, just everything. I mean, they were live streaming their entire draft party and had a film crew there. Yeah, just the scenario in which when you put everything together, yeah, a little bit of a tough look. But, unfortunately, it comes with the territory.
If Shedeur has a good rookie year, though, that's going to make a great Netflix documentary.
There's going to be one anyway,
whatever it is that they're working on. So let's talk about him, because we went into the draft. I told you it'd be the most compelling storyline, no matter what happened, because he was the most polarizing player. I have liked Shedeur Sanders as a player since last year when he got to Colorado. I think the fact that they were able to achieve what they achieved offensively despite a really bad team being a bad, like, I thought it was pretty impressive. And I thought you don't get a chance in college to see quarterbacks take the kind of heat in a game that he took really for 2 years. Like, you don't get most of the time in college. The issue is they have too clean a pocket, right? They don't feel the kind of NFL pressure that they're going to feel. And that's a difficult transition. So while I understand that some people think he plays too out of design and, you know, he takes too many sacks, I'm like, you've got to consider the circumstances, though, at which he played. I look at it the other way. He was able to be really effective in circumstances most college quarterbacks don't even have to deal with. I thought, you know, the smaller parts of it, I think his accuracy is great. Like, I think he's tough and all of those things. So I think he has a chance to be a good quarterback. I liked him more than all the quarterbacks in the class. To fall to the fifth round, though, I mean, that's pretty wild. And to be so continuously passed, that's where you probably get a little fire with some of the smoke we heard about bad meetings, concern about not character, but character, not in the sense of like he's a bad kid, but that it doesn't translate. He's maybe too confident or whatever it is. There must have been something there, because that's the only thing. Like, there's no way teams watched his tape and were like, yeah, no, he doesn't have a chance to be very good. We'll pass. Like, it can't have just been that, because you can't do the kinds of things he did in college in those circumstances and be that way. I think he's got a chance to be a good quarterback. I think he's got a chance to be the best quarterback on the Browns by the end of this season, for sure.
Yeah, maybe in a couple months, maybe by training camp, he could.
Well, he's not going to get the chance right out of the gates. We know that.
Do we? With Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco and Dylan Gabriel and Deshaun Watson with a torn Achilles, he very well might. I mean, that's a that's an open quarterback competition as far as I'm concerned.
I think it's a terrible room. That's why I say I think he had chance. I don't think he's got a chance to be a week one starter. That's too much egg on their face. Well, then why did you take Dylan Gabriel in the third? Right?
Like, great competition. There's no such thing as bad competition in the NFL. Right. I do have some questions about Shedeur. The Colorado offense is so much of screens at the line of scrimmage, let guys do stuff after the catch. He wasn't the greatest downfield passer, certainly not as good as Cam Ward was, but everything about his resume, he overcame so much as far as the deficiencies on his team. He was an All-American, Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year. This guy does have so much upside. There's no way he should have been a fifth-round quarterback. He probably shouldn't have made it after the second round at the absolute most. There were some mock drafts as we got closer to the draft, the week leading up, that had him falling out of the first round. We thought that was ridiculous. NFL teams know a little bit more than we do, and sure, guys fall for some reason. But yeah, the fact that he was still there in the fifth is kind of a joke, but it can make for a great story for him. So it's about what you do after you're drafted, not where you're drafted.
Yeah, it was, and you know, fortunately for him, it doesn't. He's got a background that doesn't affect him as much as it does a lot of guys, thankfully, because his dad's been successful and all of these things. You still don't like it. What I don't get is taking the other quarterback ahead of him. Like, if there are teams that just don't have the need yet, but to sit there and take some of the other guys ahead of him, that's where I'm like, really? Like, we've seen these guys play. Like, I don't know how you watch them both play. And
Tyler,
like, Colorado was not that good guy. Like, Colorado had a couple of like elite great players, and they got much better in year two. I don't want to take anything away from what they did. They got much better. But when you talk about what he was able to achieve there versus, you know, what Dylan Gabriel can achieve at Oregon or anything else, I'm like, man, we're just watching the same thing. Or maybe I'm way wrong. I've really liked Shedeur. I've told you the comp and the upside and sort of the ceiling for me is Baker Mayfield. It's not a knock on Baker Mayfield. I think Baker Mayfield's a really nice player. Do I think that's, you know, Joe Burrow or Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes? No, I don't. But I think he's got a chance to be an NFL starter and a pretty good one. that flirts with the Pro Bowl from time to time. That's sort of, for me, that's what it was. I don't know enough about Cam Ward. And other than those two, I didn't really like any of the quarterbacks.
You didn't like Tyler Shuck, who was in the same high school recruiting class as Trevor Lawrence?
I did not.
That's ridiculous.
Jackson Dart's intriguing. I get Jackson Dart. That one I'll give you. I'll give you Dart. He's intriguing. But that's it. That's it. And so here you are. Is it because he's a social media sensation that's very concerned about image and branding and all of that, and he has been for a long time, and he's been an NIL darling? If that's the case, man, good for you. If confidence, borderline arrogance is an issue in the NFL, I don't know that we're all watching the same league. Like, these guys can't do anything without a designed, pre-designed touchdown celebration. That's TikTok on live TV. That's what the hell's the difference? I don't get it. Like, because he's aware of his brand and he's savvy. Look at who his dad is. He was the swaggiest player maybe in any sport of all time. Like, what are we doing here? What does that have anything to do with the football player? Can he fit in a locker room? Well, we'll find out. And if he can't, that stuff gets handled in the NFL. If you can play, you can stay. If you can't, you're going to get weeded out no matter what the circumstances are. So, like, if you don't have a locker room that can handle an overhyped or overconfident young quarterback, then you don't have a very good locker room, in my opinion. So, I get it. Rick says he went into interviews and was unprepared. We've heard of one with Brian Daboll. That's the problem with this is I don't want to excuse that behavior. That's a reason you should fall in a draft. I get it. But Brian Daboll has not been very good at his job as a head coach for the Giants, and he didn't do a very good job with Daniel Jones. And I know he cut his teeth on quarterback, and I get it. But I would have loved to see what Andy Reid thought of Shedeur Sanders. Obviously, they didn't need to go through that process. That's what I want to know. A guy who's willing to work with all kinds of different players, with all kinds of different personalities, who's had a lot of success in this league. What did Andy Reid think of Shedeur Sanders? What did John Harbaugh think of Shedeur Sanders? Like, what did those guys think of that process? But they didn't have to go through that process because they didn't need a quarterback. We'll see. Look, he may not ever even get the chance. He may fall flat on his face. Doesn't really matter now because he was a fifth-round pick. Just fascinating to see it. He now wears the crown of the quarterback that fell the furthest, right? That's the drama we love. We probably won't ever see one fall further than that we thought might have a first round grade.
Yeah, there was a point where we thought that Shedeur Sanders was going to be the number one overall pick in the draft shortly after the season, during the season. And then he ends up being not only going in the fifth round of the Browns, he was the last guy the Browns even drafted when we thought that he might have been the first guy that they drafted. So just a wild way for it all to play out. And it is hard going off of the hearsay reports that you have from all these guys, that he was going into interviews with teams that already had established quarterbacks and was basically checked out, unprepared, didn't really care to take the interviews. But again, he had the places that he wanted to go and got to live with it. So, yeah, we'll see how it all works out. I think it's as good of a situation as he could have gone to. As far as trying to play immediately, because with Geno Smith in Vegas, he wasn't going to get to play there right away.
Perfect fit for him.
Yeah, I'd rather go to the Browns and Kevin Stefanski at this point than with the Giants and Brian Daboll. That place is just a constant mess. But I agree.
I think end of the day, perfect fit. Like, that's the best spot he could have landed, honestly.
I'd rather go there than Tennessee, too, so.
Yeah. So, and then you got to think about, like, and this is the thing that I've thought's pretty funny. Like, people have more issue, and you can admit this or not, but you know it's true. A lot of people out there have far more issue with the fact that Shedeur Sanders, you know, wears big necklaces, makes videos, and does those kinds of things, and maybe, you know, appears unprepared or whatever. Then you do the Ravens having Mike Green fall into their lap, who has two sexual assault allegations. Again, they're just allegations. But when we want to talk about, like, what certain issues mean in the NFL and to the fans, like, come on now. Like, let's cut the kid some slack. He's a kid. He has had a really cool life and a very fortunate one, and he is confident. And you have to remember that apples don't fall too far from the trees, and he has the most confident dad perhaps that's ever played the sport. And I'm not taking anything away. I love Prime. But if that's the reason that you're going to let that kind of talent fall to the fifth round, and if you're a fan, you're like, see, I told you, he makes videos. He cares about social media.
At the end of the day, the people that are happy that he fall are the ones that are just too insecure with themselves. The guy has a brand. He reps it well.
I just care how he plays football.
Exactly. He's confident in himself. And, again, time will tell in the NFL. The NFL never
lies.
Can he play?
Can he play? The NFL will sort that out on its own. When we come back, we'll talk Royals. Actually, when we come back, we're going to talk a cool charity event coming up, but we'll talk a lot of baseball in the next hour. Stick around, more Sports Daily coming up.